This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:08 p.m. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. It is, of course, the 8th of March, and we're celebrating women today with this International Women's Day special hosted by Ezra Zayed.
Okay, elephant in the room is Mark Richardson. What do you want to say to him? Because we've talked about this morning, haven't we? This, you know, can you do this job? Do you want kids? What about this whole question about, you know, work and babies and families?
And as I said last night, I totally accept that I will be asked that question because I chose to be honest about it. I think a lot of women face this dilemma in the workplace, no matter what their professional job might be. They might be someone who's in part-time work, working multiple jobs, or they might be climbing a career ladder. They face this issue all the time. I'm not on my own there. I decided to talk about it. It was my choice. So that means I'm happy to keep responding to those questions.
You don't find this an inappropriate question?
For me, no, because I opened myself up to it. But you, for other women, it is totally unacceptable in 2017 to say that women should have to answer that question in the workplace.
But this is my point.
That is unacceptable.
No, I'm going to count that.
No, it is unacceptable in 2017. It is a woman's decision about when they choose to have children. It should not predetermine whether or not they are given a job or have job opportunities.
What people are doing with me.
That was probably what cemented New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern's arrival in the public eye. Before this, the world knew very little of her, but in her homeland, she had been steadily rising up the ranks within her Labour Party ever since she joined politics back in 2008. And a little fun fact, not only did she serve under former Prime Minister Helen Clark, Jacinda Ardern was also former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair's policy advisor during a stint in the UK. As New Zealand's youngest Prime Minister since 1856, Jacinda has defied the more conservative mindset in that a person in leadership ought to be older, to be married, to have children perhaps, and to be less candid. Instead, she's unmarried but has a partner and they're expecting a baby this year. She has been honest with personal issues, issues like anxiety and infertility, and she calls it like it is, like how she called that talk show host out for being sexist. To get insights into who Jacinda is and how she's shaping up to be a leader to be reckoned with, I caught up with Tracy Watkins earlier today. She's the political editor at stuff.co.nz, the country's biggest online news portal under the Fairfax Media umbrella. Now, Tracy has been in the industry for over 30 years now and has been focusing on all things politics in the last 20 years. She has just returned from Australia, where she traveled together with the Prime Minister for the much-awaited Australia-New Zealand Leadership Forum. And with international National Women's Day taking place during a time when women are taking center stage in a global discussion that transcends all cultural norms, I asked Tracy her thoughts about how these important discussions sit within the appointment of Ardern as Prime Minister.
Yeah, the Me Too movement. I think it's sort of interesting because there was a little bit of discussion about the fact that just recently the four main political editors in New Zealand were all women. But in fact, that's not so unusual because when I first started in the press gallery, there were the sort of political editors for the main TV channels were also women. That was 20 years ago. And of course, Helen Clark was Prime Minister, was not our first female Prime Minister. We had Jenny Shipley before that who wasn't elected, but Helen Clark was. And so I guess it sort of feels, the Me Too debate, I guess, is about a different thing that surrounds sexism and the way that women are sort of objectified. It's a different debate. I think in terms of in the workplace and in the environments that I've been in, though, because we've got that history of so many women being in positions of power and responsibility, it's sort of, it's a different debate. But it certainly is one that I know is being held currently, and there was a lot of discussion about, for instance, Jacinda Ardern, when she got the leadership of the Labour Party, being asked about, are you going to have babies? And that sparked, of course, a huge discussion and debate about, why is this relevant? Why should a woman be asked this when she, when it's not something you would ask an ambitious young male politician? And so it's been quite interesting then to see the response when not long after she became Prime Minister, she said, actually, I'm pregnant. And I saw an interview with her the other day where she said she was actually really surprised about how positive the response was to that. And in fact, it has been mostly positive. I mean, there has been some, you know, you're always going to get the internet trolls, I guess. But on the whole, the reaction across the political spectrum, even from her opponents, was this is great. And this is probably something that, you know, the time has come when we should be able to have women in these jobs who can have families and do these things as well. So it's going to be interesting to see as this goes through.
Now, female prime ministers aren't new. So many countries have had women leaders run the show. But I suppose what's interesting about Jacinda Ardern is that she's unconventional and young, the youngest ever prime minister in New Zealand since the 1800s. And yet she's managed to win the country over. What is it about her that the Kiwis can identify with and love about her?
Well, she is incredibly authentic. You know, when you sort of meet her and when she talks, when she's sort of delivering speeches and on TV, you can just tell. It's sort of like it's what you see is what you get. She's young and articulate and gorgeous and trendy and all those other things. But I think it's that quality that really speaks to people, that she's actually got a very sort of a great sense of humour, but her personality is what shines through. And as I say, I think voters respond to that. They are looking for people who are real now. They want to be able to relate to that person and think, yeah, that person gets me. They understand me. They understand what my problems in life are. They really, you know, they want to connect to that person. They're not interested in a polished, word-perfect politician anymore, if you like. And we found that previously with another Prime Minister, John Key, who had all sorts of sort of, you know, he joked around and he did things that were not traditional for a politician. And he was incredibly popular as well because people just like that feeling of, oh, you're like me, you know, you're a lot like I am and my neighbours, and they just relate to them. But I think, you know, in terms of Jacinda, and it's also that other quality of being a lightning rod for that momentum for change that was there in the electorate, but it couldn't find the lightning rod. So for a long time, it looked like the election was going to be pretty much a done deal. There wasn't going to be much change. Mm. It didn't look like there was much of a sense that the last government was doing anything wrong. People seemed quite satisfied. But underneath that, there was a rising level of angst about average house prices in Auckland are $1 million. You know, your children can't afford to buy a house in the city where you bought a house. There was growing sense of worry and concern about inequality, that there did seem to be a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots, and concern about people living in cars because they couldn't afford rents or to buy a house or couldn't even find a place, you know. Those things had been bubbling away beneath the surface, but there hadn't really been anyone who could, if you like, basically act as a lightning rod to bring them to the surface and make the election about those issues. And I think that's basically what she did. Because she was able to connect with people and was articulating some of those generational concerns, she succeeded, whereas previous Labor leaders had not been able to connect at all on the same issues, but they just couldn't seem to manage to connect with the electorate in the same way.
I think it's interesting that she's connecting with the electorate in that moment. It might be reflective of the general attitudes or the changing attitudes of the New Zealand populace, but also globally, as a leader, she's part of the Gen X leaders in recent years, taking a look at France and Emmanuel Macron and Canada's Justin Trudeau. It seems as if she does fit in, but she also stands out because she's a woman as well, and one that stands her ground.
Yeah, and I guess that's it. There is that sense that the next generation, if you like, are impatient to say, okay, move aside, it's our turn. You didn't do such a great job of it, so we want to take our turn. And she does represent that movement, if you like, that global sense of change and looking for that sense of change and direction. And of course, it's taken a very different outcome. It's interesting how different that feeling, that mood is expressed in different countries. I mean, she couldn't possibly be more sort of the anti-Trump. And yet, you know, a lot of those same issues that were driving the US electorate, I guess, were sort of under the surface here, but not to the same extent in any way, I don't think. But yeah, you're right. She does represent that sort of that global mood, that sense of flux and sense of change that seems to be going everywhere at the moment.
Shortly after forming her government, she pledged to be a progressive leader. And if we look to her past, she certainly is a walking example of that, in that she left her Mormon faith and is now in favor of LGBT rights. What do you think we can expect from her in terms of future policies and leadership?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting, the extent to which that happens, because Labor was in power, the Labor government, sort of, a decade ago. And one of the things that swept them out of power was that very much they were a very progressive government. They reformed in a lot of areas like prostitution reform, same-sex, or not same-sex marriage at that point, but the civil unions, which was sort of the next step towards same-sex marriage. And in the end, they got voted out because of that sense of nanny statism, and also because they were seen as basically just getting too far ahead of a lot of their base, which was sort of quite conservative Christian, particularly amongst the Pacifica community and other areas, and some of the ethnic voters who supported them. They were seen as getting a little bit out of step with their values and their belief systems. So I'm not too sure how rapidly the Ardern government is going to move on some of these progressive issues. Certainly the climate has changed. I mean, we had a massively divisive debate on civil unions when Labor was last in government, and then National got into power a few years down the track. The same-sex marriage bill passed with very little opposition. Conservative politicians, progressive politicians, mostly all voted for it, which showed how much the electorate had moved on. But at the same time, I'm just, you know, I think this government will try not to get too far ahead of people on some of these progressive issues, because they found in the past that became an electoral liability for them. So it will be interesting to see how quickly they go on some of those measures.
Now, one, I guess, critical observation that has been made about the Prime Minister is understandably her lack of experience, which some say showed in her inability to address matters on things like foreign policy before she became Prime Minister. How is she faring on that front now?
Well, it's been a sort of a mixed bag, but you know, I'm not too sure that it's all been accidental. I mean, one of her first foreign policy issues was Australia and dealing with the issue of asylum or refugees on Manus Island. There had been a long-standing offer on the table from New Zealand to take people, you know, maybe 150, 200 people from there, because, of course, there's been all sorts of publicity about the terrible conditions there on Nauru. Now, the Australians have never accepted that offer because they consider New Zealand basically, their position is New Zealand is a bit of a soft touch on immigration, that because of our freedom of exchange between the two countries, that we're essentially a backdoor entry into Australia, and that if the people, you know, if we took the refugee asylum seekers, or sort of, I think they're mostly refugees, off Nauru and into New Zealand, but it wouldn't be too long before they'd end up in Australia anyway. And they felt that sent all the wrong signals. But at the same time, they never actually rejected the offer outright. So Jacinda Ardern, in one of their first meetings, foreign missions, was to talk to the Australians, put the offers very much back on the table, but I think also really sort of like put the heat on the Australians over it. And put some pressure on them domestically around the fact that we were willing to take people and they hadn't accepted that offer. That has caused quite a bit of sort of tension and unease sort of under the surface in that relationship. I think New Zealand's position was that if we did not continue to sort of like amplify that offer, that eventually Australia would turn to us when that exhausted all other avenues for finding places for these refugees, that would be there at the bottom of the food chain and just sort of get the people that nobody else was prepared to take. And I think that was sort of basically what motivated Ardern quite sort of being louder diplomatically on that than the previous government. So you can, one of the issues, I guess, is you could argue that maybe that was a bit of naivety in her first foreign policy outing. But at the same time, there's sort of a saying here in New Zealand politics that you never lose votes by scoring points off the Aussies. So there was a little bit of that, I think, just sort of playing up to the domestic audience as well. So, yeah. We'll see. But so far, I think certainly around some of the issues around the Pacific, she's in the Pacific at the moment on a big charm offensive around the Pacific. I think that's going to be interesting as well.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
Just before the break, I was speaking to Tracy Watkins, political editor at stuff.co.nz, and that's New Zealand's biggest online news portal. We were talking at length about Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and her rise to the top post in 2017. Ardern appears to be in good company. She joins other Gen X leaders like Canada's Justin Trudeau and France's Emmanuel Macron. A sign, perhaps, that people, at least in these countries, are growing in favor of younger politicians as leaders. Diving back into that conversation now, I asked Tracy about the warm but contentious relationship between Australia and New Zealand. Tracy travelled to Australia with Ardern for the recently concluded Australia-New Zealand Leadership Forum, where the Prime Ministers of both countries spoke about their joint efforts moving forward and the prickly topic of Australia's deportation policy.
Well, I think, you know, as always, there's one big bugbear in the relationship, and that is the rights of New Zealand citizens across the Tasman. And there's been a couple of issues that bring that into focus. One is simply the fact of deportations of expats who are in breach of Australia's good character laws, if you like. It doesn't mean necessarily that they go to prison or that they've got a conviction. It's just, you know, they might be in some sort of bikie gang or doing something that basically is considered to be, you know, makes them a bad person. And some of the people being deported back to New Zealand would only be New Zealand citizens by technicality. You know, I think there was one recent case where the guy had never set foot in New Zealand. And what was happening was Australia was basically deporting them back here. They were being dumped in New Zealand, no support networks, no, you know, no family, nothing. So, you know, a major issue for us domestically. But the Australians are absolutely refusing to budge on that score. So that remains an issue in the relationship. The other big issue, of course, is just around New Zealanders not having the same entitlements in Australia as Australians have in New Zealand. And it's some, you know, and that has been a long-running issue. But I think both countries have almost reached a point where they're going to have to set those two things aside and park them to one side, accept that they're going to have to agree to disagree on those ones, and try and move forward on all the other fronts. Because on the other fronts, I think the big drive is the seamless integration of the two economies to try and really facilitate business-to-business exchanges. Because our two economies are so intermeshed, basically bringing them together as closely as possible, that creates a bigger market for New Zealand, which is a wonderful for us economically. But it also creates a bigger market for Australia too. You know, it's 5 million people in New Zealand. It's a good-sized market. So I think that will have to be the focus over the next few years, and they just might have to park those other issues for the meantime.
Jacinda's win has in some ways addressed the issue of gender inequality. Now, how do you think her appointment as country leader has affected, I guess, the role of women and how women are seen in New Zealand?
Well, I think, you know, it was really quite interesting because after she... you know, we didn't have any polls, but anecdotally, you know, I was coming across women the next day after Jacinda became leader who were saying, wow, I'm going to vote for Labor now. She had that sort of effect on women. And it's you know, she sort of, I guess, she was, she encapsulated what they admired. And so she did have an effect on a lot of women changing the way they were going to vote at that election. And I think really it's just that the big issue, of course, is her having a child, you know, while she's leading the country. And I get for a lot of that too, there's a huge number of women who've been cheering her on with that. So I think she really is sort of, you know, we've had lots of women in lots of positions of power and responsibility who've, if you like, sort of been the pioneers in lots of areas. Well, once again, I mean, she is going to be pioneer in this respect. So it's going to be a sort of a fascinating year or so as she sort of like, as everyone goes through the birth with her, if you like. I think the whole country is going to be pretty much throwing themselves behind that one and be a bit like that whole soap opera thing again.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about Jacinda, I mean, almost as a political character, she's part of this generation that was taught about empathy and compassion and consideration for others.
Yeah.
And also what was, I guess, unique about her is how open or transparent she's been about her personal life. I think she has been a strong advocate for mental health. She had shared her anxiety issues. This is not, I guess, necessarily the approach to public life that was used in previous years. And it's fascinating to see how she's adapted to the spotlight now despite those fears.
Yeah, and I think anyone would agree that what has been surprising, though, about her is that there's some real steel there as well. And I think that has been the big revelation of her leadership, because we all knew that there was the compassion and the empathy. She's the sort of person who walks into a room and sees someone who needs a hand on the shoulder, and she's, you know, instantly there. And it's what I say, people actually really responded to the fact that she's so authentic and empathetic, and you can tell that she has those qualities. But what we probably didn't see before she became leader was that she had quite a lot of steel, you know, that she had the steel there as well behind her leadership. And I think, and you can see that, you know, her growing in that even as time goes on. So yeah, you wouldn't want to underestimate her, I don't think.
And I guess just to go back to this question about her personal life and that being, I guess, made part of her public identity. What's the sentiment on the ground like when it comes to what people think of or how people perceive Arden? Is there a conservative expectation that she, you know, perhaps should be married and be a mother first and politician second?
Well, I think there wasn't a lot of that, to be honest. I mean, I think it's certainly a debate that people were having over their dinner tables, but in terms of the public response and the public reaction, it was all mostly positive. There wasn't a lot of discussion, or, you know, there wasn't that other side. There weren't a huge number of people putting up the debate that she shouldn't be able to do this, if this is what, you know, that she shouldn't be having a child when she was prime minister and everything. That just really didn't form a huge part of the debate. Most of it was positive. And I guess the thing is, if you think about it realistically, she got elected at the age of 36, 37 or something, 37, had always been quite open that she wanted children, that she saw that as being part of her life. One would have to assume when you vote for a woman who's 37 and she says she wants children, that at some stage while she's prime minister, she's probably going to have them, you know?
Right.
So it shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone that she was going to have children at some stage. It was probably the biggest surprise was to her and her partner, Clark, because they had been told they would find it very difficult to have children. And that wasn't something she had shared publicly before she announced the pregnancy. And they had been looking at the possibility of needing fertility treatment, and so they had sort of parked that to one side when the election came up and she became the leader. But other than that, you would have to say that you can't possibly have thought that she might, that it wasn't ever going to be a possibility, you know, that she was never going to have children, because, yeah, it's what happens. So, and she was elected on that basis, is the way I see it.
Now, Tracy, I guess, you know, it's been about 4 months now that Arden has been prime minister. What's her main focus during her tenure, and do you see these things taking off under her leadership?
Yeah, I think they have been very well. They did a number of things in their first 100 days that have probably, I think, set the tone, but also constrained them for the next 3 years because, for instance, they announced a very big families package, the focus of which was child poverty and family incomes and giving people more assistance in terms of affording housing. And then the other big thing that they've kicked off is the affordable housing package, which is to try and build a huge number of homes. Both of those packages are hugely expensive. They don't actually have a lot more room to move for the next 3 years on the basis of having put the stake in the ground on those big policies and basically putting all the money that they've got, front-loading it into those areas. And the other one, of course, is student fees, which they scrap, so it's free tertiary education. In that respect, from now on, is going to be about bedding those things in. And the next budget, which is in May, is going to be an incredibly boring affair, I would have thought, because, and they say that, you know, they're saying, don't expect anything in the next budget. We've done it. You know, we've spent the money. We've told you what we're going to spend it on. There aren't any more big surprises to come because they have also put a lot of focus on their sort of fiscal responsibility rules that they set in place before the election, which means that they are very constrained by that in terms of they put a ceiling on the amount of debt that they're going to allow and a ceiling on the amount of new spending. So yeah, they don't have a lot more room to move fiscally.
That was my conversation with Tracy Watkins, political editor at stuff.co.nz, the country's biggest online news portal under the Fairfax Media umbrella. We'll be keeping an eye on New Zealand and its policies as the country moves forward under Ardern's leadership. We hope you enjoyed this International Women's Day special here on the Evening Edition. We'll be back.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.